again, sorry. So tonight's shir is on this week's Tazria, Parshas Tazria's Haftorah. So we don't read the Haftorah this week because it's Rosh Chodesh, but there are some interesting ideas in the typical Haftorah's Tazria that relate to the Parsha. And the story is from Malachim Beis, and it's about this individual named Naaman. So we're going to look at the story and try to understand the essential concepts and how they perhaps relate to this week's Parsha and Tazria. So the first source, if you have the Mar Makomos sheet, is really the first pasuk from Malachim Beis Parakei, and it's the beginning of Haftorah's Tazria. And it starts out with V'Naaman Sar Tzava Melech Aram Haya Ish Gadol Lifnei Adonav Unesofanim Ki Vonasan Hashem Teshua La'aram V'Ish Haya Gibor Chayil Mitzora. So there was this man named Naaman, who was a very big general for the king of Aram. So he was an Arami, and he was a big general, and he was very important to the king, and he was in high favor with the king. And the reason is because through him occurred a great salvation for Aram, and it was really from Hashem. It was from Hashem, and he was a great warrior, like the end of the pasuk says, and he was also a Metzora. He also had Tzaras. So the beginning of Haftorah's Tazria introduces us to this character named Naaman, who happened to be a general or a commander in the army of Aram. So it tells us, the first pasuk tells us that he was a Metzora, that he had Tzaras. So the question that, you know, I think is obvious is, what's the reason why he had Tzaras? I mean, why did Naaman have Tzaras? And furthermore, why is Malachim teaching us about this individual? And was it significant that he got Tzaras as opposed to many other non-Jews? He wasn't Jewish. Why was he given Tzaras? So those are kind of the questions that we're going to work with in the shir. And we'll go through some of the sources that we've shown him and try to gain some insight into the nature of Tzaras. So if you look in Rashi, in source number 2, Rashi says, V'naaman sar tzava, nisim shenasu al yidei Elisha, misader v'holich. So the beginning of Malachim Beis over here by Parakei, the Malachim is going to talk about Elisha, the Navi, and all the various miracles that he did. And this is the beginning of the stories of Elisha. And we'll see as we go through the shir what he did, what happened. So Teshua La'aram, if you look at Rashi. So what was this story? Hu Moshech Bekeshes Letumo V'harag Es Achav. So he accidentally drew his bow back of his bow and arrow, and he happened to have killed Achav Melech Yisrael. So that was the great salvation that occurred for Aram, that this great commander, Naaman, happened to have accidentally taken his bow and arrow, and he shot his arrow, and it hit the king of Yisrael, Melech Yisrael, who was Achav at the time, and he was a Rasha, and that's why he was this, that's what happened. That was the Tshuva that occurred through Hashem. So we have to get a little bit of background of this story. So if you look in Malachim, Perek Chaf Beis, Malachim Aleph, sorry, Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, so the end of Malachim Aleph, we'll see the pasuk that Rashi's alluding to. And the story, the background is that, I have to do some research here because I didn't remember my nach from a while ago. But there was Melech Yehuda was Yehoshaphat, and Melech Yisrael was Achav. And Achav, who was a Rasha, convinced Yehoshaphat to go to war against Aram. And he tried to bring in all these Nevi'im, and they all said, yeah, you're going to be successful, but they were all being told by Hashem to tell Achav and Yehoshaphat they would be successful, but the plan was that Achav was going to be killed in this war. Okay, and what happened was, with Achav and Yehoshaphat, this plan was that Aram would be expecting that the king would be Achav, king of Yisrael, and he would dress in his royal garb, but instead Achav said to Yehoshaphat, you dress in your royal garb and I'll pretend like I'm a soldier. So that's what they did to try to throw Aram off guard. But if you look in Malachim Aleph in source number 3, what happens is that, let's read the pasuk, V'ish Moshach Bakeshes Lesumo, V'yakes Melech Yisrael Bin Adavakim Uvein Hasiryon, V'yomer Lerokvo Hafuch Yadacha V'hotziyini Min HaMachaneh Ki Hachalesi. So the story is that in this war with Aram, in the end of Malachim Aleph, Achav was pretending to be a soldier, and this other soldier from Aram, he basically threw his arrow, his bow and arrow out, and He was about to shoot an arrow, and it happened to be that the arrow that he shot hit Achav, and it was an accident, and it hit him right in between the plates of armor that he wore, and it killed him. And then also this soldier was wounded, so he says, he was wounded, and he says to take me out of the Machaneh. So this was the Naaman. Look at Rashi in source number 4. In Malachim Aleph, who was this individual who killed Achav by accident? It was Naaman. Rashi says, Ish Mashach Zen Naaman, Lesumo Lo Yadashu Melch Yisrael. So Naaman didn't know that he was shooting at Melch Yisrael because Achav was disguised as a soldier, and it happened to have hit him in between his plates of armor. Bein Hadavar Had, sorry, Bein Hadavakim, Uvein Asirion, Yesh Siriono Shem Asun Klipin Klipim. So some of the armor has like shells to it. Shnem Ar Vesirion Kaskasim, Vaklipim Noflim Al Nikve Asirion, Vesosmin Osam Hin Krim Devakim. So Rashi says that he got lucky, and his arrow hit him in between these holes in his armor, and it happened to have killed Achav. So the question that we had in the beginning, we just got some background information about Naaman. So Naaman was this great commander. Just a refresh. Naaman was a great commander for Aram, and he was considered a Gibor Chayil, and he was also Metzora. So the question we had was, why was he Metzora? What's the relevance of his Taras? So we see from the story that the Tshuva, the salvation brought about from Hashem to destroy Achav and for Aram to succeed, was really this accidental situation where it happened to be that Naaman had drawn his bow and his arrow back and hit Achav by accident. So the question we had was, okay, fine, so why is this relevant? Why is this important? And is there any idea attached to the Tzaras at the end of the first pasuk? It says that he was a Gibor Chayil and he was a Metzora. So in order to understand this, I found a Medrash on this idea, this concept. And it says as follows. Look in source number 5. It's Bamidbar Rabbah. And it says that it talks about all the different reasons why people get Tzaras. And one of them, he says, is Valgasos HaRuach. One of them is being haughty. Zen Naaman. This was Naaman, Shinemar, Sar Tzva Melech Aram, Haya Ish Gadol. That he was this commander for the king of Aram, and he was a great man. Mahu Gadol, Shaisa Rucho Gasa, Mibne Shaya Gibor Chayel, Vayedekach Nitzareya. So what was the idea of him being great? That he thought of himself as this great commander, and he had this haughty spirit, and that's why he got Tzaras. So the Medrash teaches us that one of the reasons for Tzaras is Gasas HaRuach. It's really a person being haughty. And Naaman was this haughty individual, and that's why he got Tzaras. And if you look in the Ralbag, in source number 6, the Ralbag says, Kivo Nasan Hashem Tshua La'aram, Yidme Sha Tshua Zos Hi Arigas Achav, Shenitzchom Shnei Pa'amim, V'inei HaTshua Hi Ki Blimis Kavin, Moshach B'keshes Letumo V'heimis Achav. So he says, the Ralbag says that, what does it mean that it was a tshuva from Hashem? So really, the tshuva is killing Achav, because Achav was successful against Aram, but the tshuva was, the salvation was done without any intent at all. It was completely blemis kavin, because he had accidentally killed Achav. So what do we see from here? What's the first idea of this year? So I think that the Navi, Malachim, the Sefer is teaching us that Naaman, why did Naaman get Tzaras? So the first idea is that he failed to recognize it was by accident. He was successful by accident, but he tried to take credit for the situation as if he had done it on purpose. And that's why the pasuk says in source number 1, V'naman sar tzva melech aram haya ish gadol lifnei Adonav. He thought of himself as this great individual, but the reality was that he knew deep down inside that he got lucky. It's like a person who's playing baseball and they just stick their bat out to bunt the ball and they happen to hit a home run. So it's very nice that you hit a home run, but you have to recognize that you're really not the cause of it. And it was an obvious situation where Naaman should have recognized that he himself wasn't responsible for this, that it was out of his control. And the Tzaras came as a result of his Gasas HaRuach. The Gasas HaRuach was him taking credit for killing Achav in a situation which he should have really recognized that it clearly wasn't him. It was just completely accidental. So the first idea is the Gasas HaRuach of Naaman, that is teaching us the concept of Tzaras, that Tzaras, and we'll try to explain why it's Tzaras, and I'll show you as we go through the shir why it's Tzaras in specific. But one of the onshim for Gasas HaRuach is Tzaras, and Naaman had this Gasas HaRuach, he had this haughtiness which was unwarranted, because really he got lucky, and he happened to kill Achav, and it should have been clear to him that it wasn't him, that it was out of his control, But yet he took advantage of this, and he tried to think of himself as this great individual, and therefore he was punished with tsaras. Now, of course, the question is, why tsaras? Why is tsaras an appropriate onesh for this type of gasas haruach? So that we'll go through, as I said before, as we go through this shir. But the first idea about Naaman, if you haven't gone through this area before, is that concept, that Naaman, just from the first pasuk, it teaches you that he was an ish gadol, he thought of himself as this great individual, but really the tshuva wasn't his, it wasn't his salvation, he had nothing to do with it, he got lucky, and not just lucky, it was actually out of his control, it was hashgachas Hashem. So the haughtiness over taking credit and trying to think of himself as this great warrior was what caused, or what created, the situation of tsaras. Okay, so that's the first idea. I think it's pretty clear. But there's one other approach. And hopefully, like I said before, my shiurim will come together at the end, and I'll show you that there's a progression here. But there's another approach, which is a little bit more subtle. So if you look in the Medrash, at the end of Parshas Tazria, and that's why the title of this shiur is somewhat relevant, Parshas Tazria, because even though it's Haftorah, there's a lot of ideas that relate to the Parsha, and this Medrash is a Medrash Tanchuma. And it brings down Naaman. It says, "V'altismash afilu b'olam hazeh para kadosh baruch hu misoneam b'tzaras." So don't be stunned, because even in this world, Hashem, he repays soneham, his haters, with tzaras. Umi hayazeh, who was this individual that it's referring to in this medrash? Zeh Naaman. This was Naaman. V'Naaman starts of all melech haram. So it quotes the pasuk that we just read. So the end of the pasuk again says that he was this great warrior and he was a mitzora. He was also somebody that had tsaras. Bishvil ma nitzareah, why did he get tsaras? Bishvil sheshava me'eretz Yisrael na'ara kitana. Because he took one captive from Yisrael in this war, and it was a young girl. And we'll see what that means inside. So apparently his taras, this medrash is arguing a little bit with the first medrash from Bamidbar Rabbah. Bamidbar Rabbah said it was gasas haruach, but now it's saying that the reason why Naaman was punished with taras was because he took one captive, and the captive happened to be a young girl, a young Jewish girl, a kitana, somebody who's under, you know, before puberty, prepubescent girl. So we'll see what that means. And then the end of the medrash is interesting as well. So just read through the end of the Medrash, and then we'll get to the first idea, which is really what I want to focus on. So the end of the Medrash is, if you have it, source number 7. V'aflo olam haba kadosh baruch hu melake osam b'tzaras. Even in the next world, Hashem, he bestows the punishment of tzaras on Rishayim. Shneamar, as it says, v'zos tiyah hamageifa, this is the plague. Amar kadosh baruch hu b'shvil sheyisem korim livni temeim. Because the Goyim, the non-Jews, and the, not just all the non-Jews, but the Sonei Yisrael, call the Jewish people Tameim, they call them impure, Ani mitzami etzchem b'toma gedola b'tzaras. I'm going to give them this great impurity of tzaras. Uminayin shayu korin Yisrael Tameim. Where do we see that the non-Jews call Yisrael impure? Shenemar tum echa, suru tamei karu lama. They say, get away from Klal Yisrael, they're defiled, they're tame. And Echa, it's talking about how the other nations relate to Klal Yisrael. So Hashem says that, just like you called my nation tame, I'm going to be mitame you in Olam Haba with Saras. Ava Yisrael, ani akadish osam mitaran v'golan mibeinechem. But Klal Yisrael is the opposite. I'm going to mitare them, and I'm going to redeem them from amongst you. Shneamar v'karu lahem am hakodesh ki'ulei Hashem. That you'll call them the Amah Kodesh, the holy people, Geulei Hashem, redeemed by Hashem. V'chein Amar Shlomo, and Shlomo says, Kulcha Yofer Rayasi Umum Ein Becha, Ein Bach. Sorry, there's no, that Klal Yisrael has no mum. And that's talking about in Olam Haba. So it's an interesting medrash, the second part. It's talking about some type of Onesh Taras in Olam Haba. So the question is, what does that mean? What's the second part of the medrash mean? But really, we want to focus on the first part. But I'll give you an idea that I think is just a basic concept on the second part of the Medrash. But again, this is kind of a side point to the Shir. So maybe the Medrash is showing you about Tsaras that Tsaras essentially is a philosophical Onesh. It's not really a physical Onesh. It's a philosophical Onesh. And that's what it means, that it relates to the non-Jews, the Sonei Yisrael, in Olam Haba. But what does that mean philosophically? So you see that in reality, the Mitzora has to leave all the camps of Klal Yisrael, and the innermost camp was the Mishkan, surrounded by the Levim, and then you had Klal Yisrael, and part of the dinim of Metzora was that they had to leave, they had to be banished from, they're the furthest away from the Mishkan, from Shechinas Hashem. So the idea of Taras, at least philosophically, is the idea of being the most removed from the knowledge of Hashem, from the idea of Hashem. And that's why I think part of the reason why is the isolation of the Metzora, but it's also a concept that the Metzora being isolated is that he's removed the furthest from the center of the Klal Yisrael's camp in the Midbar, which was the Mishkan. So the further the Metzora is further removed because of his flaws from the knowledge of Hashem, and Tahara is the opposite. The person who's Tahor, the Kohen, has to be Tahor to go into the Mikdash, the Mishkan. So it's the opposite with Klal Yisrael. So I think that there's an illusion here that the non-Jews in Olam Haba, it's referring to the idea, the concept that they're going to be further removed from knowledge, further removed from the pleasure of knowledge, which is how the Rambam describes Olam Haba, whereas the Jews, they're going to be metaher. They're going to be closer to the concept, to the knowledge, and they're going to get the pleasure of knowledge to the highest degree. So perhaps that's just an idea that the Medrash is kind of teaching us about the nature of Taras, that essentially, on a philosophical level, Taras removes the individual, the Metzora, the furthest from the knowledge of Hashem, from being exposed to the Shechinas Hashem. But the person who's Tahor has the most access. So it's the same thing in Olam Haba. The people who are Soni Yisrael are going to be the opposite. They're going to be the most removed. And Klal Yisrael, they're going to be Metahir. They're going to be the closest. They're going to have the greatest knowledge, the greatest pleasure of knowledge in Olam Haba. So maybe that's what it's talking about. Just a side point. But back to the Shir. If anybody has any questions, always like cut me off and just stop. It's not a problem. But back to the main point here. So the question was, you know, what is the Medrash talking about when it says that that really Naaman was punished with Saras because he took this young girl as a captive? So let's look at the psukim and then somebody on the Zoom could maybe give a svara, give an answer. But if you look in source number 8 in Malachim. So it says, this is the same part of the Haftorah as well. It says, Va'aram yatu gedudim, v'yishvu mi'er tisrael na'ara ketana, v'atehi lifnei eshes na'aman. So Aram, they went out raiding, and they took a captive, this young girl, and this young girl, this Jewish girl, she ended up serving, she was the servant of the wife of Na'aman. And then afterwards in Gimel, Vatomer el Gavirta Achle Adoni Lifnei Hanavi Asher Bishamron Oz Ye Asif Osomi Tzarato. And this young girl was the one who suggested that Naaman, this commander from Aram, end up going to Elisha to be cured of his taras. And then in the last pasuk in Dalet it says Vayavo Vayagid La Adonov Lemor Kazos V'Chazos Dibra Na'ara Hashem Eretz Yisrael. And then the wife went to Naaman. Naaman's wife went to him and said, this is what this young girl told us to do, or told me to do, to tell you, to go to this Navi. So why exactly was he punished? The question that I had was, why was he punished for taking this young girl? Now, what was exactly was the punishment here? And if you look in the Radak, this is just the Pshat. It doesn't give that much insight into the Svara. But it says in the Radak, Nara Kitana Min Hashavi Sheshavu, from one of the captives that were taken captive, Haisa Zosanara, there was this Nara of the Amar Katana, and it says that she was a Katana, which is a question, because a Katana is a pre-Nara. There's three stages to a woman's growth. There's the Katana, then the next stage is Nara, which is the beginning of puberty, and then after that it's Bogeris, an adult. So why does it say Katana Nara? So it really says, so the Amar Katana, he is Nara Gedola, over Divrei Rabbi Yosi Zal, Karila Nara, the Karila Katana, Ela Katana Haisa, Haisa Mimakom Shishmo Naaron. So really this girl was a Katana, meaning she was a really young girl, but she was from a place that was called Naaron, and that's why it calls her a Katana Naara. That she wasn't both, it's impossible, but she was this young girl that came from this place called Naaron. And Vadhi Lifnei, Haisa Mishameshes Lifanea. So she served, she was the servant of the Ish Ashes Naaman. So what exactly is the flaw here, and why does the Medrash say that Naaman got Saras in this because of this flaw? So anybody have any ideas, any possibilities? And if not, it's fine. No pressure. Okay, so I was thinking that the idea, the second idea of Naaman's flaw that warranted Tsaras is really, it's not a contradiction to the idea before, the Medrash before. So the Medrash said that he was a Gassas HaRuach. That was the nature of Naaman, that he was somebody who was really haughty, and he believed that he was this great individual. So if you were, let me ask you, if you were to take somebody to be a servant, wouldn't you take somebody who's strong, somebody who could do jobs that, you know, somebody who is fully grown, somebody who was an adult? Because that type of servant would probably serve better than somebody who is small and puny, I guess, and not as strong. A young child is not the best type of servant. So you would think that if there was a practicality to the servitude, and that Naaman really was looking from a practical perspective, he would have taken a Bulgaris, a woman that was older, a woman that was more capable. But the fact that he chose a Ketana is indicative of the Gassas HaRuach. Why? Because really the Ketana, from a practical sense, is not really a better servant. But from a degradatory, the idea of degradation, it's worse. Because you have this young girl who's like really, she's really small and she's underage. And you're using her to serve, you know, to serve your wife. And the concept seems to be that Noma needed this feeling, this feeling of Klal Yisrael being degraded. And the idea of taking a Ketana, taking this young girl and exposing her to this servitude, is the concept that Noaman had to be reassured of his greatness through the degradation of Klal Yisrael. So taking the Ketana and using her in this method was a sign, was indicative of his haughtiness, that he needed this. He needed that this young girl, this defenseless girl, be the servant of his wife. It just concretized in his mind his greatness and the degradation and the weakness of Klal Yisrael. So I don't think the second idea is that much or that different. It's not contradictory, but they're exposing the first idea and the second idea are exposing different aspects of Naaman's haughtiness. The first idea in the Shir was that Naaman's haughtiness was tied to his act in war, where he just got lucky. And his inability to recognize that it was out of his control that he was successful. And that's why he warranted Tsaras. And the other idea is that his haughtiness demanded that he see Klal Yisrael in a degraded state on a constant basis. And that was the idea of taking this young girl, this Ketana, as a captive, and using her in this way. It was the concept of reaffirming to Naaman that he was great and that Klal Yisrael was weak. So I think those are the two ideas about Naaman. But one of the questions that we had earlier in this year that I wanted to take up was, well, why Tsaras? Why is Tsaras really the best onesh for a person who's haughty? And furthermore, why Naaman? Why was Naaman chosen for this idea, this concept? Because there are many other non-Jews, Sonei Yisrael, that are haughty, but not all of them get Tsaras. So why was Naaman the individual that was chosen for this message, for this concept? So hopefully, as we go through the end of this year, we'll answer those questions. So that's my goal here. Okay, so if you have the source sheets, it's on the next page, source number 10. So in order to answer those questions, there's a Gemara in Chulin, which talks about Naaman, and will give us insight into the nature of Tsaras and why it was fitting for Naaman to get Tsaras. So if you look in source number 10, it's an interesting story. It says, "The Amar of Chama Bar Chanina." So Rav Chama Bar Chanina said, "It's a Chulin Dav Zayinam Abayz. Gedolim Tzadikim B'Misasan Yoser Mivechayehem." So Tzadikim are greater in their death, greater than in their lives. Shinamar. So it quotes a pasuk from Malachim, "Vayhi Heim Kovrim Ish, V'hinei Ra'u Es Hagedud, V'yashlichu Es Ha'ish Bekever Elisha." Vayelech vayaga ish ba'atmos Elisha vayichi vayakam aragalav. So there's a story where these individuals were burying a Rasha, and they saw that there was a raiding force, there was an army going against them. So it happened to be that Elisha's gravesite was nearby. So they took this body of this Rasha, instead of burying him in the spot that they were preparing, and they threw this body into the kever of Elisha. And as soon as the body of this dead person touched the bones of Elisha, it came alive and he got up. So they're trying to bring an idea, the concept that you see that a tzaddik is greater in his death than his life, because after Elisha had died, he had brought this individual who was dead back to life just by touching his bones. So Amar Le Rav Papa, so Rav Papa said, La Abaye, V'dilma l'kiyume be'birkaso d'Eliyahu. Maybe this was done in order to, not to show you this general concept, but in order to fulfill the bracha of Eliyahu. D'chsiv, as it says, Vayhina pishnayim beruchacha Eli. So in the famous story, when Eliyahu dies, before he dies, he asks Elisha, I guess, what idea he focuses on he wants. And Elisha wanted to have double the ability, double the spirit, double the ruach of Eliyahu, meaning double the concept of his ability to do nisim. And that was fulfilled. So where do we see this? So Amar Lei, so maybe this was the fulfillment of that idea, that his ability, Elisha, to bring back this dead person was the fulfillment of being double Eliyahu. So it says, Amar Lei, so he said, Ihachi, if that's the case, Hainu Desanya al Raglav Amar Ulveso Lohalach. But if that were the case, it wouldn't have just said that this dead person got up, but it would have said that the dead person was alive and went back to his house and went back to live. So we see from here that really Elisha was unable to really revive this person. It was just temporary in order to get the body away, but he didn't really revive him because it would have said that he went back home to his family. So Elabama'ikayim, so how was the bracha of Eliyahu fulfilled? Kedamar of Yochanan, so Rav Yochanan said, Sheripe Tsaras Naaman. So the bracha of Eliyahu was fulfilled through the fact that Elisha did a nis in order to heal Naaman from his Tsaras. Shehi Shekula Kemes. Because Tsaras is similar to death. Shneamar al Nasihi Kemes. It says by Miriam, when Miriam got Tsaras, she says, I shouldn't be, or don't let me be like a mace. So we see that there was two instances. Let's look at Rashi, because he gives us a little more facts. But if you look at Rashi, it says, Kovrim ish, Rasha hayav lo nitan liyikaver etzal tzadikim. So they were burying this Rasha, who shouldn't have been buried with tzadikim. Vayaga ha'ish ba'atmos Elisha v'ayichi. V'ilu b'chayav kishirata l'hachios ben ha-shunamis. When Elisha was alive, he saved the son of the Shunamis in a famous story. So Elisha, just like Eliyahu, he put his face on his face and his hands on his hands. And what ended up happening was that really he revived the son of the Shunamis. V'dilma l'kiyume birkisa d'Eliyahu. I'm still in Rashi. D'lo sagi shlo tiskayim d'chsib batzadikim batigzor omer v'yakom loch. So maybe this not the reason why this individual was revived had nothing to do with, was specific to Elisha because of the bracha of Eliyahu. So it says Pishnaim Eliyahu Hachaya ben Hatzarfes Elisha ben Ashunamis Hachia ben Hatzarfes Elisha ben Ashunamis Vitzarach Liachios Odacher. So in order for Elisha to be like Eliyahu, he had to revive two individuals. So maybe this is the story of the revival. So the answer is no. The story of the revival was tied to him bringing Naaman cure for Tsaras, because Naaman was like a mace, and that's the answer. So the two situations where Elisha was successful and he was able to revive an individual was, one was by the Ben HaShunamis, where he had died and Elisha went into the room and he put his hands and his face on the child and he dove into Hashem. And the second one was by Naaman. So we see two things here. One is that by Naaman, Tsaras is called Misa. And the other idea is also that it was a great nes, that it was similar to the nes of reviving the son of the Shunamis. So the question is, so what does it mean that a Tsaras is like a mace? So I was thinking about this for a while, and my first instinct was to go back to the idea of isolation, that really when a person is isolated from his family and isolated from society, you feel alone. And that's the idea of miso, psychological death. But I don't think that's the case. And the reason is because Naaman, you see, was a mitzora. He had tzaras, but he wasn't isolated because he wasn't Jewish. He wasn't He wasn't actually isolated from the rest of society. So what exactly does it mean that Tsaras makes you like a mace? What is that concept that Tsaras makes you like a mace? And what's this great mace that Elisha did that he cured Naaman of his Tsaras? Okay? So hopefully I'm not going too fast, so just stop me if I'm going too fast. All right, so what is that idea? And then we'll get to the last point in the shir. So I think the idea, so we said that Naaman's flaw was that he was very haughty. And we saw his haughtiness in two aspects. One was that he considered himself this great warrior. And the second was not just that he considered himself this great warrior, but that he needed to see the degradation of Klal Yisrael on a consistent basis. And that was the idea of the Nara Katana. But now we see that Tsaras was appropriate for Gasas HaRuach. Why? Because a person who's haughty, he feels like he's immortal. That's one of the aspects of haughtiness, immortality. And the idea of Tsaras counters that. It's supposed to counter that. It didn't work by Naaman, and he needed to visit Elisha. But the idea of Tsaras is that you feel like a mace. So what does that mean? So if you remember back to Miriam, her skin was white. And same thing with Moshe. When Moshe put his hand, when he was given the osos, he put his hand in his coat, and it came out white. So I think maybe the idea is that the nature of Tsaras is such that your skin, it appears like it's lifeless, almost like it appears as if there's no blood flow to the area. And that's the idea of white. It's like an idea of paleness. So the Tsaras is like a mace in the sense that he's constantly encountering his own mortality, because he looks at his skin and he sees that his skin is lifeless. It's really lacking blood flow. It just lacks the dam, which is dam is really the nefesh, which is what the Torah says. So the mitzora is in a state of misa, because he's always confronted with his mortality. And that's the idea of Tsaras being the appropriate punishment for a Gasas HaRuach. The Gasas HaRuach thinks he's immortal, but the mitzora constantly has to face his mortality. And that's the idea of Tsaras, and that's the idea by Naaman. That Naaman was given an opportunity to do tshuva and to really see his own mortality through his Tsaras, but apparently he was incapable of doing that until he met Elisha. And that was the revival of Elisha. If you look at the Malbim, just one last point, I'm running out of time here on the Zoom because I don't have the pro level. So if it goes out, we'll just call back in and it'll take 1 second, if that's okay with everybody. But anyways, so the Malbim says in Malachim Beis, source number 12, that really you see the nature of this nes was great, because he says, look at the second line. He says, "Vitziva sheyurchatz b'yardein." I didn't get to this point actually. What was the nes? How did Elisha cure him? So the psukim say that Elisha told him to go to the Yardein and to be tovel 7 times. So if you look in source number 12, it says, "Ki amayim karim," the water of the Yardein was cold. "Minagdim lecholi atzaras." It's really opposed to really the tzaras, the choli of tzaras, meaning it's not. It doesn't make sense that it would heal the Tsaras, because Tsaras is kind of lifeless skin, and cold water, you would think, would not cure it. Sheba misivas halacha levana kadesh yada shu merape hamaka v'maka v'yigdal b'zeh malas anes. So he wanted to show that it was almost like a nes besoch nes. Elisha was trying to show that he was using the Yardane's water, which was really like a maka in itself. It was very cold water, to heal the maka of Tsaras, to show you that it was a nes, that it was really miraculous. So we see two aspects from this Gemara. One is that Naaman was afforded the opportunity to do tshuva, and that Tsaras was appropriate because Tsaras shows a person and allows a person to encounter their mortality on a consistent basis. And also the nes, the nature of the nes of the Yardane waters was such that it was really like a nes besoch nes. It was such that he used the Yardane waters, which were quite cold, to end up healing the cold maka, which is something that you wouldn't naturally think of. So it was unnatural. But we'll get to the last point. So the last point that I just want to close up the shir with is, why was Naaman chosen? What was it about Naaman that he was worthy of being the person to express this message? So if you look in the psukim, hold on 1 second. I know this is annoying, but I'm going to end the meeting quickly, and then can everybody call back in if they're interested so I can finish the shir? Sorry about that. Let me end the meeting quick. Just one last point in the shir on this. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I might have missed it, but can you reiterate what's the connection to white Tsaras in particular as an illness?
Yeah, so I think the idea. Yeah, I thought I used to think that the idea was isolation, because by Metsora they have to leave the camps and they're really not allowed to talk to people and they're like ostracized. But if you see by Naaman, that wasn't the case, and yet it says that he was like a mace anyways, and he was never ostracized. So maybe the idea is that the nature of the skin ailment of Tsaras was by Moshe and by I think it says that she was white like snow, I think, that by Miriam, or maybe the Mepharshim say that. I think the idea is that when you look at your skin by Tsaras, it's lifeless. It's like there's no blood flow to the area. And the idea in the Torah is that a person associates life with Dom, like Dom is the Nefesh. So I think that your constant recognition or encountering this lifeless area, this lifeless skin, is like a recognition of your own mortality. And just the skin itself and the nature of the skin illness is such that it leads a person to confront their own mortality on a consistent basis. So perhaps Naaman had that opportunity through the Tsaras. He had his skin. It was completely lifeless, and that's why it was like a mace, because he looked at his skin. He saw his skin all the time, and it was a reminder of his own mortality. But apparently, he didn't take advantage of that situation. He didn't do tshuva. So the last question that I had was, okay, what happens? How does the mace work over here? Forget about the fact that it was an ace, but what's the concept? And again, why was Naaman chosen out of everybody? So that's the last point. So if you look in 13, source number 13, I don't want to read all the psukim, but basically what happens is that, I'll just summarize a little bit outside. So what happens is that Naaman is desperate. He sends a letter to the king. The king is scared. He doesn't know what to do. So Elisha says, you know, I can take care of this. So Elisha, so what happens is, if you look in source number 13, Pasuk Tes, it says, Vayavo Naaman besusa v'rechbo v'yamod pesach habayis l'Elisha. So Naaman goes to Elisha's house, and in Yud it says, Vayishlach elav Elisha malach lemor. So Elisha sends out a messenger. He doesn't even go out himself. Haloch v'rachatzta sheva pa'amim bayardein, v'yasho b'sarcha l'chal utahar. So if you go to the Yardein and you go in seven times, and you dip in seven times, you'll be tahor. So Elisha, he sends out this messenger of his, the shaliach, and he gives him this advice. And look at Naaman's response. He says, Vayiktov Naaman, Vayilech, Vayomer, Hinei Amarti Eli, Yetze Yatzo, V'amad, V'kara B'Shem Hashem, Elokav, V'hinif Yadol Amakom, V'asaf Amitzora. So Naaman gets angry, and he says, I thought that this guy was going to come out and greet me, because and he was going to wave his hands at the spot of my tzaras, or over my skin, and that would take care of the mitzora. And then he goes on, Halo tov, amana ufarpar naharos damesek mikol meimei Yisrael, halo erchatz bahem v'taharti v'yifen v'yilech b'chema. And he says, I can go to much better water than the Yardin water. So he leaves, he's angry. So in Yud Gimel it says, Vayikshu avadav vayidabru ilav vayomru avi davar gadol navi diber elecha halo sase v'af ki amar elecha rechatz tahar. So they say to him, his servants, Naaman's servants, they say, listen, the navi's not asking you to do something that hard, so why not just do it? What do you have to lose? And he listens to them. It says, vayir vayitbol v'yardein sheva pa'amim kidvar isha lokim v'yasho b'saro kivisar na'ar katon v'yitar. So after he went into the Yardein, his skin was now young again, it was revived, and it worked. So what is the story teaching us about Naaman? So if you look in the 14, the Metsudas David, he says in Yud Aleph, Chashavti ki l'chvodi yatza elai. So what was his thought process? He thought that Elisha was going to come out and greet me. Vayamo lefane araglov kederach hakavod she'osim b'nei adam l'sar megidolim. Just like individuals always greet these great commanders and great officers, I thought that's what Elisha was going to do. Uvidvar rafua chashavti sheyikra b'shem Hashem. I thought he was going to call out in the name of Hashem. Yinofef yado al makom atzaras, and he would wave his hands like a magic trick to my tzaras. La'ashpia sham harafua, to influence my tzaras through this magic. Al pines uvofen ze yes ofa mitzora, and this is how the mitzora would go away. So what happened was that Naaman, the Mepharshim say that he was frustrated and angry because he really had this conception that Elisha was this magic man and he was going to come out and he was going to do all these magic tricks and he was going to call out to Hashem and do this great nace. And instead, he's just telling him to go to the Yardein And he gets upset and he says, listen, I can go to much better water in Damascus. There are these beautiful, you know, waterways, rivers I can go to. Now, what's the idea here of the Yarden? But his servants convince him to do it. So what exactly is going on here? So it seems like Elisha gave Naaman a greater opportunity to do tshuva. Because you see that Elisha was basically showing him or putting him in a situation where his haughtiness could have prevented him from following the advice of Elisha. And he almost did, because you see that he was frustrated. He expected Elisha to come visit him, which is a sign of his gasus haruach. And it was just being expressed there openly. And then he says, oh, I can go to this great water. But the fact that he was open to the concept of listening and to the concept of his avadim telling him and his servants telling him, you know, why not try it out? So that shows you that he was able, he had the possibility of doing tshuva. And he did do tshuva, as we'll see. But the concept is showing you that Elisha, he placed him, or he gave him a scenario, a situation, where he would have to face his haughtiness and have to deal with his haughtiness. And if he wasn't able to give in and wasn't able to overcome it, then he would never be cured. But Elisha gave him this opportunity, and we see from the story that he almost wasn't able to, because he gets angry. He thought that Elisha should show him more respect. He thought that it was going to be more magical, and in reality, it was just natural. So the idea is that that really Naaman was taught almost like an idea in his haughtiness, and he was able to overcome it. And we see, look at the last two sources, 15 and 16. So it says in Sanhedrin, Tana Rabbanan Naaman Ger Toshav Haya. So Naaman was a Ger Toshav, and look in source number 16, he was a Ger Toshav. Shelo Kibo Lav Shar Mitzvos, the Kibo Lav Shelo Lav Avodas Kochavim. So he wasn't a convert, but he never did Avodah Zarah after this. So what do we see? We see that Naaman, it all fits together, because Avodah Zarah is really an expression of a person's haughtiness. They get to choose the gods that they want to serve. And the idea of our God, of Hashem, is the opposite. It's really a recognition that things are out of our control, that we really aren't, we should be in awe of Hashem, that we're really shfelim, that we're really low in relationship to our God, to Hashem. So you see that Naaman was given this opportunity, and he did tshuva, because you see that he was a Ger Toshav. So maybe that's why Naaman was chosen, because he was capable of recognizing the idea of God, as opposed to others, like other non-Jews perhaps would be in the same situation, and they wouldn't be able to overcome their haughtiness. They wouldn't be able to overcome the flaws. But Naaman was chosen because he was able to see God. He had the capability of being on a high level. So, and that was recognized through this story. So perhaps that's why he was chosen. And in the end, we see that he was successful. So just to put everything together, like to put it all, you know, in one story here. So the questions we had in the beginning was on this Haftorah Tazria, and it's all about the story of Naaman. He goes to Elisha, he has Taras, he's this great warrior. He goes to Elisha, Elisha tells him to go into the Yarden, not himself, but he sends out a Malach, which is also a sign of, yeah, it's the same idea that Elisha was putting him in a situation where he had to face his own haughtiness. And then he's cured. So what's the point of the story? So it teaches us a lot of different ideas about Tzaras, and also the nature of the perfection of Naaman and the onus of Tzaras. So we started with the concept that Naaman is called the Gasus HaRuach in the Medrash. And we see there's two aspects of his haughtiness. One is that he took credit for killing Achav when it should have been clear to him that it wasn't him. It was an accident, completely accident. And the fact that he was taking credit and he believed that he was this great individual was one sign of his haughtiness. And the other was the Nara Kitana, that he really didn't need this young girl to serve his wife. He chose her because he had to. There's this idea of being the idea of him being great and Klal Yisrael being in a degraded state was always had to be present. And that's a sign of his haughtiness. And then the question was, so why was Taras? So Taras is makes a person into a mace. And the question is, how does it do so? So I wanted to say that really the skin of a Mitzora is white, typically. And the idea is that it seems like a person who sees the pale skin, almost lacking blood flow, it's a consistent reminder of your own mortality, because you're always looking at this almost dead skin. It looks like dead skin. And that's the idea that you realize that you're going to die. But Naaman was given the opportunity, and that was why the onus was appropriate. But you see that he was incapable on his own of doing tshuva. So Elisha, the idea of him coming to Elisha and even approaching Elisha shows you that he was looking for something. He was capable, and Elisha puts him in this situation and gives him an opportunity to do tshuva, because he forces him to face his own haughtiness by having to go to the Yarden instead of going to these fancy rivers. And Elisha didn't approach him himself personally, so he forced him to face this haughtiness, and Naaman was able to overcome it. And we see from the Gemara at the end that Naaman was a Ger Toshav. So you see that it really had that he really was almost like a Baal Tshuva. It really had he really was capable, and he was really able to overcome his essential flaws. So hopefully the Shir gave us insight into the nature of Tzaras and how it works a little bit, and the idea of Naaman. So when we do end up reading Haftarah Tazria, at least we'll have greater insight into the story, hopefully. Or I will. So anybody have any questions?